24. The cradle, it was easily big enough to have acquired proper noun status in their minds, stood in the center of a square 5 times larger than the one where they had come upon the blasted statue. And when she got a really good look at it, Susanna realized how old and gray and fundamentally grungy the rest of Lod really was. The cradle was so clean it almost hurt her eyes. No vines overgrew its sides, no graffiti daubed its blinding white walls and steps and columns. The yellow plains dust, which had coated everything else, was absent here. As they drew closer, Susanna saw why. Streams of water coursed endlessly down the sides of the cradle, issuing from nozzles hidden in the shadows of the copper-sheathed eaves. Interval sprays created by other hidden nozzles washed the steps, turning them into off-and-on waterfalls. "Wow," Eddie said. "It makes Grand Central look like a Greyhound station in buttfuck Nebraska." "What a poet you are, dear," Susanna said dryly. The steps surrounded the entire building and rose to a great open lobby. There were no obscuring mats of vegetation here, but Eddie and Susanna found they still couldn't get a good look inside. The shadows thrown by the overhanging roof were too deep. The totems of the beam marched all the way around the building, 2 by 2, but the corners were reserved for creatures Susanna fervently hoped never to meet outside of the occasional nightmare, hideous stone dragons with scaly bodies, clutching, claw-tipped hands, and nasty, peering eyes. Eddie touched her shoulder and pointed higher. Susanna looked and felt her breath come to a stop in her throat. Standing astride the peak of the roof, far above the totems of the beam and the dragonish gargoyles, as if given dominion over them, was a golden warrior at least 60 feet high. A battered cowboy hat was shoved back to reveal his lined and careworn brow. A bandana hung askew on his upper chest, as if it had just been pulled down after serving long, hard duty as a dust muffle. In one upraised fist, he held a revolver. In the other, what appeared to be an olive branch. Roland of Gilead stood atop the cradle of Lud, dressed in gold. "Now," she thought, at last remembering to breathe again, "it's not him. But in another way, it is. That man was a gunslinger. And the resemblance between him, who's probably been dead 1,000 years or more, and Roland is all the truth of content you'll ever need to know." Thunder slammed out of the south. Lightning harried racing clouds across the sky. She wished she had more time to study both the golden statue which stood atop the cradle and the animals which surrounded it. Each of these latter appeared to have words carved upon them, and she had an idea that what was written there might be knowledge worth having. Under these circumstances, however, there was no time to spare. A wide red strip had been painted across the pavement at the point where the Street of the Turtle emptied into the Plaza of the Cradle. Maud and the fellow Eddie called Jeeves the butler stopped a prudent distance from the red mark.
"This far and no farther," Maud told them flatly. "You may take us to our deaths, but each man and woman owes one to the gods anyway, and I'll die on this side of the deadline no matter what. I'll not dare blame for outlanders."
"Nor will I," Jeeves said. He had taken off his dusty bowler and was holding it against his naked chest. On his face was an expression of fearful reverence. "Fine," Susanna said. "Now scat on out of here, both of you."
"Ye'll back shoot us the second we turn from you," Jeeves said in a trembling voice. "I take my watch and warrant on it, so will."
Maud shook her head. The blood on her face had dried to a grotesque maroon stippling.
"There never were a back-shooting gunslinger, that much I will say. We only have their word for it that that's what they are."
Maud pointed to the big revolver with the worn sandalwood grip which Susanna held in her hand. Jeeves looked, and after a moment he stretched out his hand to the woman. When Maud took it, Susanna's image of them as dangerous killers collapsed. They looked more like Hansel and Gretel than Bonnie and Clyde, tired, frightened, confused, and lost so long in the woods that they had grown old there. Her hate and fear of them departed. What replaced it was pity and a deep, aching sadness. "Fare you well, both of you," she said softly. "Walk as you will, and with no fear of harm from me or my man here." Maud nodded.
"I believe you mean us no harm, and I forgive you for shooting Winston. But listen to me, and listen well. Stay out of the cradle. Whatever reasons you think you have for going in, they're not good enough. To enter Blaine's cradle is death."
"We don't have any choice," Eddie said, and thunder banged overhead again as if in agreement. "Now let me tell you something. I don't know what's underneath Ludd and what isn't, but I do know those drums you're so whacked out about are part of a recording, a song that was made in the world my wife and I came from." He looked at their uncomprehending faces and raised his arms in frustration. "Jesus, pumpkin pie, Christ, don't you get it? You're killing each other over a piece of music that was never even released as a single." Susanna put her hand on his shoulder and murmured his name. He ignored her for the moment, his eyes flicking from Jeeves to Maud and then back to Jeeves again. "You want to see monsters? Take a good look at each other, then. And when you get back to whatever funhouse it is you call home, take a good look at your friends and relatives."
"You don't understand," Maud said. Her eyes were dark and somber. "But you will. Ah, you will."
"Go on now," Susanna said quietly. "Talk between us is no good. The words only drop dead. Just go your way and try to remember the faces of your fathers, for I think you lost sight of those faces long ago.